Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter for this session of Senior Focus. This is the week around the world that people hear about World Elder Abuse Day and raise awareness about the abuse of elders in their society. It's also an opportunity to talk about the changing population shift which is happening in every country where we have a rapidly growing ageing population. Professor Paul Spoonley has called it the demographic disruption of the 21st century, and that's not a mean title for nothing. It's very apt. There's been nothing on the scale that this is going to mean for society ever before. We've never had so many humans lasting so long, or nor so many of them. And it's not just a collection of old people all the same, because as we age, we actually differentiate more. When we're younger, the people who are in our age group are similar to us. And this is true in our 20s and our 30s and our 40s. You can ask a few questions and on a very simple basis of the answers, you can probably guess a person's age. But post-60-odd, we actually start to differentiate a lot more. A very fit 80-year-old is more like a 40-year-old. A very sick 70-year-old may be unable to compete with somebody 95 who's fit and well. The differences are huge, and they also span different life experience. So some people have lived all their life in a small town in one country. Other people have lived in many different societies, have learnt different languages, and have reinvented themselves almost every decade. So they're very young in mind and as well as body. So they're keeping refreshed and ahead of their game. And they're very surprising when you interact with them. So our very mixed, very diverse ageing population is presenting a lot of challenges, because you can't plan for people who are so diverse as a group any sort of way, because the lack of commonalities just defy the odds of you getting it right. So that presents a problem in itself, but the lack of awareness of this population shift is what is most worrying. And I say this in all honesty because lately people have been raising the issue of we don't do enough big picture thinking. We don't look far enough ahead. Our planning's too short term. Our planning's too myopic. We're not actually seeing the big picture. So we're missing the wood for the trees. Now, with climate change, there's such a joined up exercise across the globe now to reduce emissions. There's such a recognition that the ice age, the polar ice at the North Pole is melting at a much faster rate. And there's so much scientific evidence about this that this is coming on the news as fact. And no longer is the sprinkling of scientists who say it's not happening, no longer are they being listened to, no longer are they being taken seriously, no matter who's funding them or whatever's behind their pronouncements. I mean, basically, the writing is on the wall. We need an environmental revolution, something akin to the Industrial Revolution, because it's going to take something this big, a shift, to change. Meantime, for seniors, I keep seeing in these big advice documents written to government, whether it's about health, transport or housing, I keep seeing an absence of the needs of seniors, an absence of a recognition of this growing senior population. It's not anywhere in the planning documents. It's not. It seems that they don't have tools to pick up the elephant in the room. So it just goes unnoticed. And in health, I think there is a little bit of a recognition with COVID. So they will be sending letters out to all the people over 65 to get their jabs, invite them to book in. So that is happening, and it's very clear that there is a concerted effort to put aside a whole batch of vaccines specifically for seniors. And that's great. It's quite specific and it's quite transparent. However, that is an exception to the rule. And it's happening at a time when I think questions would be really seriously asked if it wasn't included, if there wasn't a recognition of the seriousness of seniors needing to get their injections before others, because they have so many complications, not just age, but so many other issues as well. So going back to my original concerns, this particular session, I want to really sort of hone in on the fact that the media in this country has been very silent about elder abuse during this week. And June the 15th is the actual day, World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. And it's normal that there would be at least some interviews on Radio New Zealand, or there would be some in-depth news item in the paper. There would be some expert speaking and recorded. And I don't see anywhere any recognition at all this week so far. It's a bit rather disconcerting. I think there have been a few high-profile cases recently where power companies haven't treated older customers well, or where banks have mistreated somebody who had enduring power of attorney and rights to operate their mother's bank account. And these cases show heavy-handedness, power and control, an example of ageism in one case, overzealousness of staff in another case, and accusing someone of elder abuse when they didn't have strong enough evidence at all to back that up. Some of these cases end up going into mediation. Other cases, the media coverage is sufficient to cause the institution to look at its behaviour and change things. So power and control is very much part of ageism, very much part of what people think they can get away with. So the fact that both political parties before the election last time, both Labor and National, agreed that we needed a commissioner. We needed someone akin to the Commissioner for Children for seniors, who would focus on older adults' needs and would have the power to investigate, have the power to take cases through the courts, which is particularly important when family members are so involved in psychological abuse and financial abuse, and other family members find it very difficult to take action against their own family. The divisions can be very bitter and very deep, but not easy to resolve. So as a result, there was considerable anticipation of something actually happening. And it's very surprising that the day where you would have expected something to be announced has been and gone. Nothing has appeared. Despite the fact that we have a minister in cabinet who was the Minister for Seniors, and she's doing a good job when it comes to health, and she is focused on COVID-19. She has her hands full. But one would have expected a little bit of pickup from the work that had been done by Tracy Martin, our former Minister for Seniors, because she had done a lot of the preparation, all of the background work, and she had been overseas and seen what they were doing in Wales and Australia, seen how the resourced office backed the office for, of the Commissioner for Seniors. And so it's not just a question of having a person in a role, it's having resources around that person so they can actually do a good job and do the work. What we're facing at the moment is not just disasters one after another, whether it's White Island or the floods in the South Island or it's earthquakes or whatever. Not just emergencies that we have to know where seniors live and know how to get help to get people evacuated and who needs the help, where are they and so on. Not just keeping registers and being up to date about that information, and a lot of councils are not up to date and not prepared properly to help seniors. It's not just that, but over the whole society, if we took a big picture view, we would be saying, look, at the moment there are four critical crises on the horizon that we're struggling with. There's the housing crisis, of which many programs have been devoted to this in the past, and we will come back to it. There's the infrastructure problems, and they're at crisis point, not just because of the cost of the many millions to fix them, whether it's pipes, whether it's unsafe bridges, whether it's water supplies and the Three Waters projects. The list goes on. It's not just one or two things. It's quite big because it involves many parts of the country and involves councils across the country and involves government and that intersection between the two. So the whole funding mechanisms of how you fund the waters issues and the, I say waters, plural, because the three waters is how people are talking about water nowadays. And we need to look at how much water needs to be treated. Do we really need to expensively treat all our water so that it's the grey water, it's the water for washing the car and that sort of thing? Do we really need to put all the chemicals into the water to do all that? Isn't that overkill? Isn't that expense of a waste? Couldn't we better divert the cost of that into the cost of replacing the pipes? There are many, many questions. But I'll go on and on to the third crisis, which is the health system. As we know, there's a frontline shortage of workers and we know that they're being poached to go, you know, and this is one of the reasons why we need to address their pay to try and keep them here. But the shortage is worldwide, so we're constantly having to up our game to see what it is that nurses need. And it's not just pay, it's the working conditions, it's the training and support, it's the backup. I noticed myself when I was in hospital recently just how run off their feet the nurses were, and while they were very professional and really I got top-notch care, there was a time when I sort of thought, my goodness, they're giving me 100 pages at 11 o'clock at night to read before my final meeting with the cardiology team the next day, you know, because somebody had forgotten. And there's just a limit to what can be crammed into their shifts and done expediently. And they can't just keep filling in for people and extending their shifts and working overtime and the rest of it without burnout. So that's a really big problem. But also bringing in a whole new system is going to take some time to bed in. And that, while it is, I've no doubt it's needed, I've no doubt the DHBs, the lack of fairness across the country. You got the quality of health care depending on where you live. And that's got to stop. And it can only stop if you have one system for everyone. So there is a need to address the health care and certainly to look at how we're going to deal with older people in terms of dementia units and care. There's a shortage of hospital beds now, but it's going to get a lot worse. And how do we encourage people to stay in their own homes? We talk about it. We know it's the best ultimately, if it's properly managed and properly thought out, if the type of facility that they're living in is at least serviceable for older age, at least allows for changes in their lives, like wheelchairs being brought in and so on. But unless there's planning and unless that long-term planning recognises the large numbers of older people, then it's not going to work. There isn't the planning in housing. There isn't the planning for the infrastructure. It hasn't been up till now. And who's going to pay for the infrastructure? That's what I forgot. I forgot about the costs. The ratepayers, if they're seniors, haven't got an increasing income that would allow for these percentage increase in the rates. So I think that we've got some very serious problems with those three. And the fourth one is transport. And that's probably one of the more complex and one of the more serious ones, because we talk about the congestion problems on the road. And yes, we do have a lot of people in cars. We have a lot of seniors in cars who don't want to get out of their cars and certainly don't want to start riding bikes. On the other hand, we have a lot of seniors who are collecting children from school. They're doing the school run for mum and dad who are working. And when they do that, they are part of the congestion. And then we have the lack of practicality of public transport. The difficulties for those who can't read the front of the bus and work out which bus to get on. It's quite hard to read the digital signage in the sunlight, even when you've got good eyes. I don't know what it must be like for people with low vision. There's the problem of getting the buses to actually lower. I mean, the number of times I actually have to ask drivers to lower the bus, it's quite extraordinary. It makes a difference if I carry a walking stick, I've noticed. They quite often anticipate then and actually lower it for me. But it's still a battle, day in and day out. And then, of course, there's the whole business of now they've devised a network route system where you got one bus before to do the whole journey. Now you've got to get maybe three or four buses to do that journey. And the gaps in between the buses, you're largely left to your own devices to walk between stops. There are no covered ways. It's often you're lucky if there's even shelter at your stop or a seat. There's no lighting at the bus stop at night in a lot of the local bus routes. So the arterial roads are fairly well covered with sheltered seats and lighting, but the bus stops off in the local bus route areas are often just the original whatever was there from before the Super City days. I see signs that say North Shore City on some shelters. But I notice that there are major shelters missing from bus stops right outside retirement villages or right outside pensioner villages or right as the last stop that you would get before you were going to hospital or any kind of major area where quite a few people use the bus regularly. It seems to me to be such short-sightedness that we don't look after people on the first leg of the journey or of the last leg of the journey, because those are the legs that make the difference. They convince people to use public transport regularly or to ditch it. And we're not looking after the public as a whole, but we're seriously not looking after seniors and their particular needs. It's very difficult if you have a heart condition to walk more than, say, 400 or 500 metres without having a rest at a bus stop or on a seat. And that is just not the case. I mean, most people are having to walk 700-800 metres, and even then there's no seat when they get there. I could go on, but those four areas, housing, the infrastructure, the health system and the transport, all have major documents out in the public at the moment that are planning for the next 5 to 10 years. And these planning documents actually make the case to central government for funding for particular regions. I notice, for example, in the transport sector, there's the model of funding for buses is being looked at nationwide. In Wellington region, they're pushing to kind of nationalise the buses again and bring them back under state control and get rid of a competitive commercial model. The modelling has been tough because it's seen fare rises. The fare box recovery is the lingo they use to describe how they're going to claw back money from the people who use the buses. And considering we all pay 40% out of our rates for those buses, it means we're actually paying twice. We're paying in the fare as well as from our rates. So it's, you know, it's worth quite a lot of money to us, actually. I calculated that with the average rates being around $3,000 in Auckland, 40% of that would be $1,200. So roughly people are spending in their rates about $28 a week on a whole range of transport provision, including roads and so on. But buses are part of that. Maybe if people got it into their heads that they could claim back some of their rates through using buses, through making sure they did the equivalent of riding on $25 worth of fares a week, they might actually, out of spite, start to see some value out of public transport and actually start figuring out ways to make it work for them. It's not a bad idea. But basically, for seniors, needs to be uppermost in decision making. There needs to be some seismic shift go on, and Professor Paul Spoonley's demographic disruption needs to be like a volcano, and the disruption needs to be felt and really seriously considered, because the hot rocks are going to fall in the next decade. It'll be too late when we get to the next round of planning of this kind of big picture stuff in the next decade, when we've done nothing, it'll be too late to make moves that make sense. And in terms of shifting emissions and the environmental revolution we need to have, shifting emissions is going to be a mixture of stick and carrot by the government, as we've seen with the new incentives to buy electric cars and the taxes on people who want to import diesel vehicles and of a certain type and so on. But that's not everyone, and there's a lot of people who are going to have their existing vehicles and keep them. So we, with our tradition of having a high number of second-hand cars on the road, often 10 years of age or older, we have a lot of emissions from that. And we also have this notion that it's fine to jump in the car and drive 2Ks to the dairy. I'll just pop and get such and such. Whereas if we planned our lives a little bit more in advance, we could be including our local walk to get various items that we need. We could think ahead, and we could walk to the dairy and save that very expensive trip, because it's those short trips that are the real killers in terms of emissions, and they are the ones that, if collectively we could get people out of doing them, then we could actually shift these targets quite rapidly. So that's one of the big levers that has to change in this future. And it's one that would be doable for seniors. And they're probably just as prone to doing it as anyone, even more so. But we have no research on that. Seniors are very keen to help, to add value, to support where they can, and they often have, through their experience in the war years of having to give up things like butter and so on, and cope with rationing of petrol, and they've made those kind of moves before, so then they can belt tighten, and they are not immune to the benefits of all of this. I think that it's really got to be a program of inclusion, of finding smart ways to message, not do the confusing messaging that's been happening with COVID-19, where the messages get split between different government mouthpieces and people end up not being sure whether there's going to be enough vaccines and whether they should try and get a vaccine or whether they should wait to be shoulder tapped or just what the system is. I think this confusion isn't helpful. So, you know, maybe we could work on getting the messaging right. But we do need to have the, in the big picture of the changes that we need around climate change, the changes we need in housing and in infrastructure and health and transport, we do need to have seniors in the picture. We do need to find a way to bring them on board. And I think we need a campaign, something like Bridging the Gap. After all, if it's good enough for cyclists and walkers to have a bridge designed for them, I think that we need to think about where do seniors fit in the conversation. So today, for our music, I've chosen Bridge Over Troubled Waters because I think we have a few troubled waters to bridge at the moment. And I look forward to being with you next week. Thanks for listening.
Feeling smooth.